There was a spiritual fragrance about her that lingers on as a flower crushed to the earth continues to scent the atmosphere. There is a moment in each person's life when all the work, the dreams, the future seem so sharply in focus that they are reality. Reality, however, is a cruel instrument. It has the power of change. And it was this power that struck with that an entire world was changed. Tears, of what value were they? Anguish, of what value was it? Reality, the terrible final moment, had made its appearance. The curtain had fallen for an entire generation. But did it really? What about the small boy who watched and said, "May I have a flag for Daddy?" Or a little girl standing alone on the steps of a cathedral, watching her mother as the mighty of the world paraded in silent tribute to a man she would never really know? At the head of that silent marching group, with kings and emperors, with heads of state, with a world watching, one woman stood alone.
For almost 3 years now, everybody had been trying to look like Jackie Kennedy. They can spend the rest of their lives trying to be like Jackie Kennedy.
Her loneliness, her fear, her grief were contained in the beauty of an unbelievable courage. A courage that transcended her babies or her love for a young and virile man who had given the world new visions and new directions. It was her courage in that horror-stricken moment that gave an unbelieving world the strength to stand, proud, unswerving. It was her courage that became a symbol. From the last kiss in a blood-bathed convertible to the low sound of taps on an Arlington hill, it was her courage that sustained a world that was filled with grief. Her children may never know their father, a man of integrity and above all devotion, but they must know someday of a woman who stood alone and carried the grief of the world on her shoulders with a dignity beyond belief. A woman who served her country far beyond the call of duty, with courage that few men could muster. There was a spiritual fragrance about her that lingers on as a flower crushed to the earth continues to scent the atmosphere. This is Jacqueline Kennedy, wife of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 35th President of the United States. A great lady, a first lady, a bouquet of red roses and a ring. A ring which bound these two hearts through years of happiness and years of history. In a moment, history turned into tragedy. And after a first stunned silence, a senator of the United States said sorrowfully,
"And in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hand. There was a father with a little boy and a little girl, and the joy of each in the other, and in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a husband who asked much and gave much. And out of the giving and the asking, woe with a woman, what could not be broken in life, and in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands and kissed him and closed the lid of the coffin."
Of course, the First Lady remembered him that way. But also in a more personal way, a woman's way.
The forget-me-nots of love, love that remembers always, love that had first come softly to two hearts more than a decade ago, love that had come when she was courted by the young senator from Massachusetts, when they were both young, and there was in their hearts only the glory of hope and love, and no premonition of deep, dark tragedy. She was in love. A woman fashioned of things that dreams are made of. And about her was, and forever after would be, the aura of romance. She would have seemed a fairy princess no matter where she lived or in what circumstances she was born.
She happened to be born to wealth and family ancestry. From youth, she knew luxury. She was surrounded by good taste and a love for the beautiful, the artistic, the creative. She happened to be born with a golden touch that made soldiers and artists, statesmen and writers alike, love her and talk to her as if she were one of them. She had the human touch that made Americans of all races and creeds, men and women, the rich, the poor, feel close to her and pay homage to the warm and vibrant human being that shone forth brilliantly wherever she went. Beautiful, romantic, youthful yet mature. That's the way millions looked upon her. And not in the United States alone. For she became in time the United States ambassador to the world. But first and foremost, she was what millions believed to be the very model of a first lady. She graced the White House as much as the White House graced her. To a mansion of dignity and power, she lent charm and poise and warmth and a sparkling personality that made the center of America's political power into a home, into a gathering place for the nation's intellectual leaders, a place where good food, good manners, and good conversation reigned. Jacqueline Kennedy longed to share the most famous house in the world, the White House, with all of us, but especially with her loved ones. She wanted it to be more than a national shrine. She wanted it to be a home, at the door of which there was a sign reading, "Welcome." She wanted it to reflect the beautiful words of Lydia.
"If ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there."
But she also wanted to make it into a home for her husband and her children.
So now my wife and I prepare for a new administration and for a new baby. Thank you.
Yet with her sense for the historical, which was natural to her and her husband, she decided that a series of publications should be prepared to explain the history, the architecture, and the contents of the White House. She herself wrote an introduction to a publication brought out by the White House Historical Association. And this is what she said.
"This guidebook is for all of the people who visit the White House each year. It was planned at first for the children. It seems such a shame that they should have nothing to take away with them to help sort out the impressions received on an often crowded visit. It was hoped that they would go over the book at home and read more about the presidents who interested them most. Its purpose was to stimulate their sense of history and their pride in their country."
She made us love that house as she loved it. She made us see the reality of American history behind the luxurious facade, as she gave all of us a new sense of belonging, as she belonged, to the history of our nation. She loved that house as she loved the history that it represents, and she loved being part of that history. Again and again, she went with her husband on tours to this part of the country and that, and to important capitals of nations in this hemisphere and abroad. She was able to talk to many different audiences, and she always talked to them in their own tongue.
Madre y padre y familia en este continente que pueda conformarse hasta que los habitantes de todo nuestro pueblo tengan oportunidades de trabajo bien remunerados, puedan vivir decentemente y recibir enseñanza. Estas cosas deberían estar al alcance de todos y no limitarse a unos pocos afortunados.
Once when they were in Paris on a history-making tour, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, president of the greatest democracy on earth, said proudly,
and I quote, "I am the man who accompanies Mrs. Kennedy."
Jacqueline Kennedy helped to create a new image of our country and thereby to shape the history of three eventful years. She was a living part of living history. Yet unlike her husband, she hadn't been born to politics. Politics had been in the very air that John Fitzgerald Kennedy breathed from the moment of his birth. It was his destiny to become a politician, as it is some men's destiny to be writers or artists or architects. Surrounded by politics from youth, he took naturally to it, and like his father, and his father before him, considered it a way of life that came naturally to him. And even more, it was an obligation. For to the Kennedys, the political arena was not only the most fascinating place of all, it was a public service. And the Kennedys, including John Fitzgerald Kennedy, had and continue to have a strong feeling for public service. Jacqueline Kennedy might never have developed a love for politics, but for her marriage to a man destined to climb the highest rank of the political ladder, that is, the presidency of the United States. Even when Jacqueline Kennedy moved into the White House after her husband's election, most people regarded her as only a beautiful and gracious adjunct to the president who would lend glamour to the famous mansion on Washington's Pennsylvania Avenue. They were wrong. Beauty, grace, and decorativeness were hers. But there was more to Jacqueline Kennedy than the casual reader of newspaper stories and magazine articles could glean in the beginning. Soon Americans learned that their president's wife was also a woman of taste, intelligence, sophistication, and of intellectual curiosity. A woman whose many interests included the arts, furniture, history, languages. A woman who soon formed what was once known as a salon, a meeting place of men and women of achievements in many different fields. But even this wasn't the total picture of Jacqueline Kennedy. In this country, the word politician sometimes carries an undeservedly derogatory meaning. It shouldn't. For politics is a high art in a democracy, and its practitioners are the sacred keepers of the freedom of choice, which is the essence of a democracy. To say then that Jacqueline Kennedy became a politician, and a good one, is to pay her a high compliment. For she understood instinctively the true meaning of politics, to make a compact between those who govern and those who are governed in our democracy. The politician in Jacqueline Kennedy emerged and triumphed as she began to tour the country with her husband. Could a woman born to wealth, educated beyond the average, with a deep and abiding interest in all things cultural, make contact with just ordinary people? Could she establish a bond with, say, farm women in Iowa and housewives in California, and men and women in every profession and every trade, everywhere?
Mrs. Eisenhower and I share the grief Mrs. Kennedy must now feel, and we send to her our prayerful thoughts and sympathetic sentiments in this hour.
She could, and she did. Wherever she went, Americans warmed to her. They realized her desire to establish a bond between herself and them. Her naturalness conquered them. Her charm captivated them. Her sincere interest in them delighted them. She had that natural nobility which people everywhere and at all times have loved and responded to. They understood and often shared her and her husband's interest in making America the culture center of the world. For they understood instinctively that Jacqueline Kennedy and John Kennedy wanted America to be that for them, for all the American people everywhere, and not for themselves, not for a small, exclusive coterie, but for the American people.
In 1990, your sons, daughters, grandsons, and grandchildren will be applying to the colleges of this state in a number three times what they do today. Our airports will serve five times as many passenger miles. We will need housing for 100 million more people, and many times more doctors and engineers and technicians than we are presently producing. That is why we're trying to do more in these areas. As in the 30s, Albert Thomas and Franklin Roosevelt and others did those things which make it possible for not only Texas, but the entire United States to prosper and grow as we do in the 1960s. In 1990, the age of space will be entering its second phase, and our hopes in it to preserve the peace, to make sure that in this great new sea, as on Earth, the United States is second to none.